Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Karen Conti, who you hear Sundays as often as we can. Sometimes sports gets in the way of our weekend shows from 3 to 5. Is the attorney we turn to now for some thoughts on the arrest of a suspect in the case of the four killed students at Idaho University. Hi, Karen. How are you?
Hi, John. Happy New Year.
Press conference. Happy New Year to you, too. A press conference at 3 o'clock this afternoon. We'll carry that, I believe, live, or at least we'll sample it in the WGN Radio News at the top of the 3 o'clock hour. How optimistic can we be in a situation like this? That is, we want to believe they've got somebody and it's the right person. For the police to arrest someone and make a statement, what has to have happened, would you say?
My guess would be that they've got strong evidence. And again, you know, I know only what everybody else knows from looking at the internet and television, but I would guess that there is DNA evidence that they have found connecting Koberger with this crime scene. And the reason I think this, John, is right from the beginning, even though it was a complicated crime scene with four people being stabbed with the same weapon, which is very complicates the blood and it complicates all of the DNA testing. There were defensive wounds on some of the victims, and defensive wounds can be items underneath fingernails and these types of things. My guess is that he left his DNA at this crime scene and that maybe he wasn't in CODIS. He probably wasn't in CODIS, but somehow they now know that he was the person who left that DNA. And I would imagine that they're not going to arrest somebody based solely on seeing a white car and his car matched that description, but it's something much, much more significant.
You're saying CODIS. You're saying there was a sexual assault that took place?
No, I'm saying, the database, that national database. Like, so, for instance, if somebody's DNA was taken at the scene and then that person had been arrested and his DNA had been taken already because he was arrested, they would have connected that to somebody who had been previously arrested. That is the assumption that I made all along. But my guess is that they found his DNA and they went and got his DNA from some item, whether it was a car or whether it was from garbage he threw out, and that they somehow are connecting the DNA at the crime scene with his DNA.
There was so much blood, they said, at the scene. I suppose if he had sustained a wound, too, it might have been difficult to figure out who's who and what's what, huh?
Absolutely. And add to it the fact that the 911 call that was made was first reporting that someone was unresponsive and that when the paramedics came, the idea was that this was a wellness check and maybe a medical emergency, not a crime scene. So my guess is that they didn't treat it as a crime scene when they actually entered the premises, again, further kind of making this a difficult thing to investigate.
The reporting today is that they've halted the cleanup, the remediation of that property. I suppose they would. I'm surprised that they were still cleaning it up at all. It was interesting to me, too, that they said we're looking for a white sedan. You know, maybe an Elantra out there was last seen at the scene of the crime. That seems like such a thin piece of evidence. I wonder if that was helpful.
Well, you know, there were 19,000 tips called in such a short period of time. And again, I'm guessing, you know, educated guessing here, but my guess is that someone knew that there was some connection with this guy and that they did see that white Elantra, and that further tied him to the scene, and maybe they investigated and found him in Pennsylvania. And so there's been more than a connection with just a white car, because you're right. They're not going to arrest them and then extradite them back for a crime that's been followed internationally on just the thread of we saw a car that looks like yours.
And this is obviously just your educated thinking on this, but you deal in this area more than the rest of us, I suppose, or think about these things. One wonders if this was a targeted killing or if he was randomly, for some reason, in that place and killed them.
Well, there's evidence on both sides of this, John. First of all, there was one of the victims, Kaylee is her name, Congal, whose injuries were so much more egregious than the rest of them. They weren't just stab wounds, and not to get super graphic, I mean, they were gouges. And this is more than just a random, you know, person who maybe didn't know the victim. So that leads me to believe that there was some connection, some rejection, some anger that was going on. Maybe the other three victims were collateral damage. I don't know. The other thing that now we know about this guy is he was getting his PhD in criminology, and he was an avid crime buff. He had sent out flyers to people in prison saying, will you be part of my survey? I'm trying to figure out the emotional things going on in your head that predicated your crimes. So this is a guy who was really into criminal conduct. Now, does that mean he just had an average interest in it? Doesn't sound like it. Sounds like maybe he had some idea about committing a crime himself. Again, we're speculating here, but isn't it strange that someone, you know, charged with a quadruple horrific murder has such an avid interest in criminology?
So how does extradition work then? What's necessary for them to say, yes, we'll do this?
Yes, there's really going to be no issue here. It's just a process and a formality. Our Constitution requires if you're going to take someone from one state and bring them to another, you have to make sure that they are properly arrested, that there's probable cause, and it's a formal proceeding, and it will happen quickly, and he will be extradited to Idaho.
So then what happens then? They charge him. Can you walk me through just what the legal process is in a case like this?
Yeah, they will charge him. And at the formal reading of the charges, he will get a lawyer, whether it's a private lawyer. I don't know anything about his financial well-being. And if not, he will have a lawyer who will be appointed to represent him. There will be an arraignment, and at that time, he will be formally charged with the four murders, we assume. And then the process just begins. He will not get bail. There's no way he'll get bail, of course. And the case will proceed. And my guess is that they're going to continue to gather evidence from his home in Pennsylvania. They're going to seize all of his computers if they haven't done so already to try to tie him to where he's going. They're going to see where that car was, because if he took that car from Idaho all the way to Pennsylvania, there are going to be videos of him going through the tolls, and it's going to be the timing is going to be important. And this case is far from over, and I think we're going to be seeing much more in the way of evidence gathering.
One last thing, and that was kind of what I was alluding to at the beginning of this conversation. You're hopeful that they got the right guy, and there must be an enormous amount of pressure on the state's attorney or the investigators there to make sure they get it right. They build a solid case and that they've got the right guy.
Absolutely, and that's why it was so uncomfortable for all those weeks when everyone was, there was a clamor to come down on law enforcement saying, you know, where the heck is this defendant? Why can't we find him? And it's for that very reason that you don't want to rush to judgment, because once you do that, then there's a reasonable doubt. If you pick the wrong guy and then you drop charges and you bring against another guy, your first defense as a criminal defense lawyer is, hey, you got it wrong, so you must have had a reasonable doubt. So this was, it took a long time in the public eye, but I'm hoping that with all of the resources and all of the tips and all of the things that went into this, that we did get the right person here, and that person will be brought to justice.
It's been about 6 weeks, and I guess that's a nice reminder for all of us, right, Karen? We'll close on this, that we in the media, you in the law, all of us need to sort of be as patient as possible. We don't want to compromise public safety, but we also need to let these people do their job.
Absolutely. That's the first priority. And I think the real concern here, too, because it was a college campus with all these kids running around and parents who are afraid for their kids anyway without a murderer walking around, they wanted to make sure their children were safe. And that really makes a lot of sense why there was such a clamor. And again, now with all the social media and all the crime buffs who are online solving crimes, that adds to the whole mix. It adds to the fear. It adds to people being wrongfully spoken about. And, you know, so all of those things are now playing into our investigations, good and bad, truthfully. I mean, some of it helps and some of it doesn't.
Yeah, think about the Boston Marathon bombing. The first names that surfaced in images were the wrong guys. You know, when you crowdsource something like this, it may make it more. Imagine 19,000 tips And maybe some of them were helpful and 18,995 of them weren't. So I guess we need to keep those things in mind.
And you don't want to have anyone talking about people being charged wrongfully because, you know, there's a mob justice thing going on here. And even the people in the House who survived, there was talk online about their being involved or they were complicit. And people that were cited outside the bar with these kids, like, may have been part of it. And now none of that is probably true. But yet you can imagine how much pressure that brings to bear on people who now have this, you know, or the reputation impaired.
Oh, I was thinking about the ex-boyfriend who had a dozen phone calls placed to his phone between 2:30 and 3 in the morning, and they weren't being answered. They weren't being answered. And you say, well, what do we have here? He was asleep. That's what we had there. So, you know, it appears as though he's totally innocent. Okay, that's what we know so far. A press conference at 3 o'clock. More details this afternoon on WGN. Karen Conti, heard as often as we can. Are you on this Sunday at 3, Karen?
I will not. I'll be actually be on the Steve Dale show at just before, maybe about 2:30.
Good. We'll listen for you then. KContiLaw.com. Thank you, Karen.
All right, John. Take care.